You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, is animal fat actually good for you? A doctor will make the case. If you can't concentrate for a full minute because of all the distractions of life, you might just be a creative genius. And get your bracket in order for the NCAA tournament. Let's meet the friends. Striking a pose in a beaded silk number from Coco Chanel, perfect for evening wear or just kicking it with the homegirls, it's Erin Myers.
I wish I was wearing Coco Chanel right now, but question for you.
So do I.
When it comes to the catwalk, is the world ready for models with more meat on their bones? That is the question.
And he takes his coffee just the way he likes his women. Chris Martin is here.
That's right. Bitter. Starbucks could be in hot water after their latest campaign that encourages controversial conversations with its customers.
Well, all right, we're going to find out what that is coming up.
Huh.
And by the way, you'll be happy to know that this hour is sponsored by NHL Game Center Live. Sign up, watch hockey on demand or live on your favorite device. Never miss a slap shot, a check, a save from any team you choose. Get extra camera angles and multi-game views and watch every out-of-market game live on your device for less. And when you get started with NHL Game Center Live for as little as $24.99, pocket change, my friend, you actually support this show, and we thank you for that. Head over to PhilHewlettAndFriends.com right now and click on the Game Center Live link. You'll see it at the top right of the website. You can't miss it, as a matter of fact. Nice, pretty gold letters. Clickety, click, click, click. All right, let's get things started. Erin, with you, now, we're talking about models, supermodels, what?
Runway models and advertising models, but the tall, skinny ones that we're used to seeing, especially on the runways.
Bony girls.
Mm-hmm. A lot of them, yes. And today, France, though, has announced that they might pass a guideline now for models that would require them to maintain a certain weight per height and a certain body mass index, which would be 18. And they said around 5'7 would have to weigh at least 121 pounds, and that if people hired models that didn't reach these guidelines, they could actually be fined or end up in jail.
What does that mean, a body mass index of 18? Is that number high, low, medium? What is that?
That's a good number.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, that's still pretty skinny.
That's the difference, different than a body fat index.
Yes.
Is it right?
Yes.
Because a body fat index would be a good one to be somewhere between 7 and 12, wouldn't it?
Well, that's a good one if you're super skinny or super ripped.
Yeah.
If you go to the gym every day and use HGH, you might have a 7 or 12.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Like, that's not average.
Oh, okay.
Mega athletes are like down to 5%, and those are like the runners who are all the time. Like,
constant.
They can get down very low.
Right.
But, you know, we'll see. And I guess Italy, Spain, and Israel already do this, so it might be good. I mean, because there's definitely...
But, I mean, are they getting chunky girls out there?
Not so much chunky, but they're getting bony girls, and that's their concern. And in France, actually, there was a girl in 2007 who died, who was a model.
Oh, yeah.
And anorexia.
Well, see, they talk about there is pressure, and from your agent, your modeling agent, and the agencies have been in trouble for this in the past, mm-hmm. for encouraging girls to have severe diet practices and take pills and that sort of thing.
I did a live TV segment for the Academy Awards one year, and I had models doing a fashion show for us on like Academy Awards dresses.
Yeah.
We were on the red carpet of the Academy Awards, and my model fainted on live TV because she did not eat. And she literally spun around and timber fell over on the ground.
Wow.
And I had to have the camera shoot up a different angle, and I checked on her, and she was fine, but she hadn't eaten, and she was teensy tiny.
Now, if I were your director, I would have trained the camera directly on the girl while she was on the ground.
I felt so bad for her. It was really embarrassing.
I mean, that's some good TV right there.
It was
ultimately
horrible.
Well, was she okay? Ultimately?
Oh, she was fine. She ate half a banana, got back up, and then started walking around the red carpet taking pictures with everybody, and I'm like, really?
Atta girl, that's the way to do it. Get back out there on the next shift.
You mess up my life. Segment yet. Now you're going to go take pictures on the red carpet. Thank you so much for that.
So empathetic.
Yes.
The trend does seem to be switching from super skinny models to girls with a little bit more meat on their bones. And I think there's a lot of us out there that are happy for that.
Right. I mean, look at the Victoria's Secret models. I mean, there's some meat on some of those girls.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that trend is looking like it's going to continue. They're just getting people that are a little bit – women that are a little bit more full-figured and a little bit more natural-looking.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's good.
You have to have maybe a little more to offer to be a supermodel.
Now we just have to see if the pendulum swings too far the other direction.
Too far?
Right.
And what would
usually
that be, Chris?
That, mm-hmm.
Well,
yes.
that's if you get girls that are overweight, you know. I mean, there has to be a happy medium.
Yeah, well, that's what they're selling.
You're still a model.
That's what
they have plus size models.
That's what they're selling at the Target, right? But if you're going down to you know, some of the fancier places, you're not going to find too many sizes over a 7 or an 8, but you're going to find 18 to 24s for the average woman, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's
a modeling category for that, too. I just don't think they're considered models or supermodels. You know, there's models that model for Lane Bryant or these other companies.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Well, we love you for who you are.
Exactly. It's what's inside that counts.
That's true.
Yes.
After you get to know somebody. But the first... okay, never mind. All right, so what else do we have? Now, this animal dude, what's he from? Animal Planet, Jeff Corwin?
TV host Jeff Corwin, yeah. Does...
What's his deal? Did he not learn anything from the croc hunter?
Apparently not, because he's been in Thailand and they caught and released, they did release it, this huge stingray. And they're saying it could be the largest freshwater fish ever landed. And I guess, you know, 14 from feet from foot to tail and then an 8-foot wingspan. And they said it weighed between 750 and 800 pounds. And
wow.
We have pictures and stuff, I think, on the website. And it's just massive.
Mm-hmm. It's on the show fun page. So you go take a look at it. But yeah. Oh, man.
They
it took like 12
like
guys to hold it down.
Holding the tail. Yeah. They have somebody holding the tail probably to protect them all from the sting part of the
ray. Which we should remind you, that's how what was his name, the croc hunter, Steve Irwin, how he died.
Just
getting
freak
a little
accident.
Too close to one of those guys and
that
zap
was, that was sad.
Yeah, it was. All right, gosh, did you mean to bring the show down like that, Aaron?
I know, I'm just in that zone.
We all miss the croc hunter.
I'm the zone today.
We miss him.
Yeah, that was a
rough
one.
Make everybody cry.
I almost did shed a tear over that. I had no connection with Steve Irwin, rarely watched his show, but for some reason I just felt like that was a good guy that
he was very gregarious and cared about animals.
Such a fluke chance like that.
I think I'm going to cry. Bring us back in. Give us some kind of human interest, some endearing story that'll make us feel great about humanity.
Well, this is, I don't know if it's going to make you feel great about humanity, but it's kind of interesting at least. There is a New Jersey woman, and it's showing how technology can help deliver babies. I guess she went into labor, her water broke, and she was actually at her doctor's office, but her doctor wasn't there. She was doing surgery like 20 minutes away, and they're like, we can't get here. So they had her husband hold up his phone, and they FaceTimed with the doctor, and she watched everything and had her assistants deliver the baby.
Wow.
So FaceTime helped deliver a baby in New Jersey.
How about that?
Yeah, very interesting.
Well, see, that speaks volumes about the doctor's assistants.
They did very well.
They've been at a delivery or two along the way in their career, and they were able to just follow the instructions of the doctor. But do you think medical treatment will go this way when the doctor isn't required to have some kind of tactile experience with you in meeting with a doctor? You know how they push on you and try to like feel certain. Did you feel that? Did you you know that sort of thing?
Yeah,
like they get out that old funny looking hammer and they hit you on the knee for the reflex.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do that over the phone, but
no.
But just the same. So many times your consultation is more or less just that, consultation. The doctor sits over at a computer and types in your answers.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and
what
giving
it's become,
birth
right?
is a natural human thing. It's a natural thing for all living creatures. So maybe really all you do need is guidance, somebody sort of talking you along and somebody to help receive the child. But at the end of the day, if we didn't have doctors, women would still give birth, right? Successfully.
More or less.
Most of the time. There's definitely circumstances where it can be dangerous, though, so it's always better to have somebody there.
Yeah, agreed.
We're out of the dark ages now, thankfully.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Where are we? Oh, yes. Chris, if I want a cup of coffee, I'm going to go into a Starbucks. I'm going to order a cup of coffee. I'm going to sit down or leave or whatever. I'm going to drink my cup of coffee. And that's where my relationship with Starbucks in this particular instance begins and ends. Isn't that right?
Normally, that's the case. You go in, you get your cup of Joe, you move on about your business.
I don't want to have a whole relationship and a conversation with the barista. I don't want to talk about world events or anything like that, do I? I just want give me my copy and my coffee and my correct change and okay, I'll give you a pass if you spell my name wrong on the cup. Isn't that pretty much
the relationship? And I'll comment on your artistry if you happen to draw something nice around my name.
Okay, hang on to that thought for a second, because coming up, you will not believe what you will be expected to talk about the next time you step into a Starbucks, and that's next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Thanks for tuning in to Phil Hewlett and Friends. Added.com, and you're at our website. You can check out all the things there, including the show fun page. That's where, yeah, the fun stuff from the show. If we have a picture or a video, you could see it there. All sorts of things. You could hang out there for hours. Until you get a life. All right, so let's get a little more conversation going on this Starbucks thing. Starbucks has decided to implement something that we wanted to make sure you knew about before you step in. And God forbid you're a barista at Starbucks this week or this month or however long this experiment lasts, because this is what your job's going to be like for the next however long. And it doesn't sound to me like it's going to be any fun, Chris.
Starbucks is the world's largest coffee chain, and by far they have they for sure have a lot of influence, as much influence as any of the other larger companies that we deal with. And yesterday they launched their Race Together campaign.
Race Together.
Race Together. And they type the words Race Together on all their coffee cups. And with that, they're encouraging customers and baristas to engage in conversations about race relations while they're ordering their coffee.
Now, what define encouraging?
That's weird.
Well, here's the thing. So it says Race Together. Obviously, that alone is going to encourage the customer to ask, well, what's this about? And then the barista has to explain, well, this is about our attempt at encouraging conversation about proper race relations. The baristas are also giving out Race Together stickers, and Starbucks has taken out a special ad in USA Today. We should see that today or tomorrow. And what they're claiming is, Starbucks is claiming the idea is to encourage greater understanding, empathy, and compassion for one another. But I haven't seen one positive review about this idea.
Oh, this isn't going to go well.
No.
I mean, you know, that kind of conversation, first of all, you've got to broach the conversation carefully. You've got to know what you're doing, got to know what you're saying, and certainly you have to ask questions all of a sudden. So how do you ask the question? How do you broach it? The barista, let's say the barista is white and the customer comes up, customer's black, and what does the barista say? So you're black. What's that like?
Right.
Is that how you start it?
It's so awkward, yeah.
How do you feel about that whole Ferguson thing?
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Oh,
right.
And to make the baristas who don't have that experience, I'm imagining, mm-hmm. to make them do that or tell them that that's their responsibility
now
seems not fair.
Look, we're skilled conversationalists. We've all been doing this in this room. We've been doing this for some time, and we know when to ask a good question, when not. And we're not fail-safe. We're going to ask a stupid question from time to time. Mm-hmm. But then we know how to reel it back in and say, whoa, wait a second. Before, there's hot coffee. And hot water and so on. Somebody could get scalded.
Uh-huh.
And the person waiting for their coffee is probably feeling the minor withdrawals you feel before you get your caffeine. You're a little bit on
grumpy.
Edge.
Yes.
Yeah, you're possibly
grumpy.
Oh,
yeah, you've waited in line and all of that. And so bad things can happen here, I think, because we're not – generally speaking, it's not an easy conversation to have. And people aren't ready to have an open conversation unless the setting is just right and the timing is right and that sort of thing. You set it up. When you see these conversations on television with the TV talk shows and that sort of thing,
they're moderated.
People know what they're getting into when they step in the room. But then you order your coffee and blammo, all of a sudden you're in the middle of this race conversation and it's a hot subject, especially with Ferguson going on. You go to pick up your coffee around the corner and your name's not on there. It says Whitey. What the heck just happened?
Yeah, this might not be good for business. I don't know.
No. And, you know, and like you said, the professionals on television, they have a tendency to even lose it once in a while on these hot button issues.
And
they're taking the average
They're
person.
Encouraged to do that, too, because it's good television to see people going at each other's throats. I mean, that's the prevailing understanding. But just the same, it's not simple. I mean, it's something that you sit down, I don't know where it happens. It could happen anywhere. But it's at the moment, it's a particularly good time to raise the question. You say, you know what, I don't get what's happening in Ferguson. I don't really understand it. I mean, maybe you have a better understanding of it. What do you think about that whole thing? And and how should I think about it? You know, that's a non-threatening way to ask the question. But how often is that going to happen at the Starbucks thing?
Yeah, no. And to get where with that question anyway? All you're going to get to is a potential argument or one person stating a very obvious fact of that stuff shouldn't be happening.
No. And then everybody else waiting in line is going to be angry because they're waiting after you're fighting.
Right. Well, you two stop arguing about race. Yes. I'm trying to get coffee here.
You turn into a brawl.
You're ruining my morning.
Yes.
And a couple of other quick bullet points. Sorry to cut you off, Phil. Yeah. But the CEO of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, I guess he's been talking about race relations in-house for a while. And interestingly enough, the Starbucks senior VP has since deleted his Twitter account from all of the outrage Twitter tweets that he was receiving from people that are obviously
against this. Oh, so you're saying it was bad for business?
So far, it appears to be that way. I don't think this is going to last another week, but we'll have to see.
Meantime, over at the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf, they're talking about gay issues.
Yeah. or they're saying, we're not going to burden you with those types of conversations.
Right. Just come get coffee and have your scone.
Yeah, and at this other joint, it's all abortion talk all the time.
Most people are upset because they feel like Starbucks is trying to capitalize on these issues in order to drum up more business, which is sort of...
Well, they're getting free publicity, but I think it's bad. And and I don't know about you. I would hesitate to go inside if I thought I'd be forced into a conversation somehow through peer pressure. The signs are everywhere. Okay, fine. Here's my money. Okay, what am I supposed to say? All right, fine.
Yeah. Where do you want to go with this?
Yeah.
I only get coffee from AMPM and 7-Eleven anyway.
Really?
Yeah, I boycotted Starbucks a long time ago.
How about the coffee over at the McDonald's? You like
it's
that?
It's not bad.
I haven't tried theirs yet. No.
Yeah, you get a coffee and a bag of French fries, you're good to go.
Coffee's coffee. That's why I don't need a fancy schmancy.
You know what people are doing today? They're not drinking coffee, unless that's coffee with a beer back or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Or is it Bailey's with a coffee back? Is that how that goes? I forget. I haven't served or ordered these things in a while. Today, of course, is St. Patrick's Day, and just to confirm, I don't believe any of us in the studio here are wearing a shred of green.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
No. Just double checking.
I was just hoping Erin would pinch me, but she refused to.
Yes, right.
Cooties.
She's all pinched out. So it's only natural that we talk a little St. Paddy's Day activity, and most of it is surrounded around beer and whiskey and that sort of thing. So we're going to talk about alcohol from time to time over the course of this program. And did you know that America and its beer has finally overcome its stereotypes? Once we hit 15 billion craft breweries, by the way, 15 billion craft breweries, the rest of the world realized that we've got more going on than Keystone Light.
Wow.
Do you ever have one of those?
Oh, yeah. Keystone Light. I love their old commercials, too.
Yeah? I don't remember
Keystone
them.
Guy?
Isn't that the one people buy like in college because it's cheap, or is that a different one?
Yeah, it's a cheap beer.
Cheap beer. All right. Okay. The website Thrill List just ranked the best beer countries in the world using factors like critics, reviews, and ratings, the number of beers and bars, and brewing history. And I have the top 10. We'll start at 10. Italy. Move up to Norway. And then the Netherlands. Canada. You'd think Canada would be higher up there because like beer and ketchup are the two major food groups up there. And, right? Japan. Then number 5 is Denmark. Pa, Germany's only number 4.
Wow, yeah, I would have thought they'd be higher.
Then the UK, well, they've figured out ale
their
in the
pubs,
UK.
Yes.
English ale. Number 2 is the good old US of A.
Wow.
And you want to guess number 1?
It can't be Ireland, but no. I mean, I'm going to throw it out there since St. Patrick's
this
Day.
This is the kind of beer I look for. This is my favorite kind of beer. If I'm not having an English ale, I'm having a Belgian beer of some sort. And Belgium is the number 1.
Okay.
Yeah.
USA number 2 with 15 billion microbreweries, and I think that 14 billion of those are in San Diego.
Yeah, you might be right. And by the way, on this day, Ireland, you bring up Ireland, came in 13th on the list. So happy St. Patrick's Day. And don't mind that slap in the face. One more St. Patrick's Day thing, the stereotype that we have, not just the Keystone Light, but this is the Coors and Miller and Budweiser country, right?
Yeah, just straight beer.
Yeah, beer. 42% of Americans can't spell Budweiser. They think there's a Z in there somewhere. There's an app called Bartender with no E before the R at the end. Bartend R, bartender. It lets you share info about your favorite bars and drinks, and then they just analyzed 100,000 recent posts to see which brands of booze Americans have the hardest time spelling. And here are the top five. All right, we'll start with number five. And if people are writing this, it's probably because they've had three or four shots of it. Jack Daniels.
Have a hard time spelling that
one?
Yes.
Wow.
Maybe
Yikes.
They're leaving off the apostrophe because it's apostrophe S at the end.
Oh, maybe. Let's hope that's
it. The I-E-E-I, only after C.
Yeah, but after three or four shots of Jack Daniels, I mean, how good are you going to be at texting in the word Jack Daniels?
Yeah, you just put Jack.
Hennessy is number four. 15% of people couldn't spell Hennessy. 23% could not spell Jameson. Now, that's some Scotch whiskey right there, right? 42% Budweiser. Wasn't even number one. It was number two. The number one misspelled, 90% of people misspelled this.
Coors Light?
No, it's Jägermeister.
You got it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Jägermeister.
That one makes sense, yes.
It does not start with a Y.
No.
Yeah.
All right. There's some fascinating research about creative geniuses. Yep, I'm talking about you. But as creative as you are, you can't shut out all that background noise, information that leaks into your brain and distracts you, and ultimately, you get nothing done, right? Well, we find out what you can learn from the geniuses of history with one of the researchers behind this fascinating new study. You'll hear from her next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thanks for tuning in. We're so glad you're here. Aaron Myers and Chris Martin are here. I'm Phil Hewlett. Hello, how are you? This is for you, creative geniuses out there. Admit it, you think you're one, right? I think we all do to some degree or another, but documented geniuses like Proust, Darwin, Kafka, Chekhov, you've heard of those guys. Used to play cards with them Friday nights. They recognized this problem along the way, the problem of sensory information leaking into the creative process, and they did something about it, and there's some fascinating research that has sprung forth because of the realization and knowledge that they displayed here. Daria Zabalina is the lead author of this new study out of the Northwestern University, and she joins us live. Daria, thank you very much. As I read through the study overview, I was beginning to absorb the crux of the matter when I got three notifications that people commented on a comment I made on Facebook. So help us understand what's at issue here. Is it just distractions or is it something else?
Sure. Well, first, thank you for having me on the show. It's not necessarily just distractions. It's also just sensitivity to the incoming information. So you might be distracted but not really process the information deeply. What we find in our study is that people who are more creative, they process information. They're more sensitive to the information that's coming in.
So what kind of information? Like you're sitting at your computer, you're trying to type up some thoughts that you just had, but you hear a particularly strange chirp from a bird, and you have to go outside and see what kind of bird it is.
Right, something like that. I mean, in our study, of course, it was very simple, but it could translate to that in the real world. And somebody who is less sensitive might not hear that bird and not go out and look what's there. So.
Does it mean I'm a genius if I'm easily distracted?
Not necessarily.
Bummer.
Of course, it might mean that you have a predisposition to be creative or to be a genius, but it's not just being distracted. It's what you do with that information that you're paying attention to that is distracting you.
Yeah, right. So should I try to distract myself to unlock some creative inspiration?
You know, it could be a good possibility, especially if you're working on something really hard and you're so focused and you're trying to solve a problem and it's just not happening. So at that point, it's a good idea to go for a walk, or actually research shows that just being in a positive mood might facilitate having sort of
a creative breakthrough.
Paying attention to the information that is less accessible. So just anything that puts you in a positive mood might be a good idea.
All right, makes sense. So tell us how the smart guys of history dealt with this once they realized it was an issue.
Right. So there's Franz Kafka, for example, is said to line the walls of his office where he wrote with cork because he was so easily distracted.
So he tried to soundproof the place.
Right, right. And there's also many other creative geniuses that like Charles Darwin and Johann Goethe and Wolfgang Mozart and Marcel Proust that they've all set.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, even the music guys, that makes a lot of sense because, I don't know, for me, always walking through life, I hear things in a musical way, conversations, noise outside. Everything to me is noisy in a musical way, and it's either on beat or it's discordant, but it's always interesting to me, and I listen for the musical beat of life. But you know, one thing I wonder, and I've never been diagnosed, but I have always imagined this is the case because I'll get home and talk to my wife, and she'll say, "Why didn't you? Were you not paying attention? Why didn't you respond? You missed an opportunity on the show." Well, this seems like it happens in almost every interview, so let me apologize in advance. But does it mean that people with attention deficit disorder have a higher percentage of creative genius in their group?
You know, there's actually research suggesting that that might be the case. Again, it's not necessarily just being distracted by the information, but doing something with it, actually applying it. So people with who's been diagnosed with ADHD, they might have a predisposition. They're more likely to be creative.
Yes, interesting, yeah.
Okay, sure.
So when you did this study, you had a bunch of people, you had participants, and you did something, in the way I understand it, a divergent thinking test. Break it down to the basics for us. What was in the test, and what did the participants do to either pass or fail?
Yeah, sure. So we actually had two measures of creativity, and people who performed, so the divergent thinking task, people are asked to respond to questions or draw things within a limited time. So an example could be, an example of a question could be, name as many uses, creative uses for a brick as you can. And so within 2 minutes, participants are asked to name.
Break a window.
Right.
You got one.
So that wouldn't be very original, right? So, but within 2 minutes, hopefully you would name some responses that could be more interesting than that.
Mm-hmm.
So then, actually, people who responded well on this task showed that they had more selective sensory gating, but we have some ideas for why. This test is very time-limited, so you actually do need to have sort of very selective, being able to pay attention and having selective sensory gating might actually be an advantage on this task.
Yeah.
But we also asked our participants to list their creative achievements in the real world, so having sort of a real-world validity to their creativity. And that's where we found that people who have real-world creative achievements, they were more likely to have leaky sensory gating, leaky sensory processing.
Yeah, yeah. Where the good stuff leaks out or extraneous stuff leaks in. It works both ways,
the
right?
The other way.
The other way, right. Well, fascinating stuff. And if people want to learn more, where is the study published?
The study published is published in Neuropsychology. You can also find me on the web, Daria Zappolina.
All right, or at the Northwestern University website.
Northwestern University, exactly.
Right. Okay. Very good. We'll publish all of those links for you to make it easy for people, and continued success to you with your psychology research there at Northwestern. Daria Zappolina, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Up next, we're going to have another doctor of a different type altogether, and I think we're going to upset the nutritional apple cart with our next guest. Again, he's a doctor who asks the question, is animal fat actually good for you? And I know what you're immediately saying.
I hope so.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, we're going to delve into the tasty food out there. Isn't it true, though, if fat's just tasty, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the main ingredient in all the wonderful, rich cooking that you... If there's a chef, right,
yeah,
and the chef's got a whole crew, then in almost every case, there's a fair amount of fat in the food because that's what makes it taste so good. And that's where all the calories go up. And then you're always shocked to find out, what, I just had a meal that was 4,000 calories? Boy, it was tasty, but man, I'm going to have to run a marathon to work that off. All right, so here's the thing. March is National Nutrition Month, and I know you didn't know that because you're not paying attention to such things, are you? That's why we're here. So it's a good chance for you to think about eating healthy, and maybe you take steps to do so, but there are so many conflicting messages out there about what really and truly is healthy. And I think we may confuse things for you a little more now with our next guests, along with his wife, Kelly Peterson, and Dr. Dan Peterson. Together, they've authored the book, The Asian Low-Carb Secret, a medically proven system to help you eat well, stay slim, and regain your health. We have their book available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Go get it. And Dr. Peterson and Kelly Peterson, join us live now. Hello, you two. I think we've all decided at one point or another that we would skip the whole milk, the butter, the cream, the crispy chicken skin, and go easy on the cheeses and opt for healthier choices like skim milk, margarine, skinless chicken breasts, because that's what everybody's been telling us for, it seems, forever. Are we certain anymore that those are the right food choices?
Yes, certainly. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yes. You and the doctor.
It's a healthy choice. And I have Dr. Dan Peterson with my husband right here with me, and he certainly would be able to tell you better that why is good healthy food. So
what do you think, doctor? Healthy, the skinless chicken and the margarine and the skim milk and all of that, or should we go ahead and just power on the fat?
So first I'll have to admit I did the same thing everybody else did and followed the nutrition experts for about 3 decades doing the low-fat routine. What started became clear about 10 years ago, and the evidence just keeps building, is that the evil thing in our diet is not the fat. The fat is what's good for us. It's the carbohydrates, the sugar, and the starches. So, no, don't do what they've been telling you all those years. Look at the new news and eat fat.
All right. Okay, so this isn't just you saying it, though, is it?
Oh, no. I mean, it's all over the literature. In fact, if you look, I mean, as a popular bellwether for 20 years ago, the cover of Time magazine said, you know, eggs were bad for you, and they had a nice article a few months ago saying eggs were good for you. The scientific literature is strong and growing that fat is good for you.
Yeah, we get confused because every other week, coffee's good, coffee's bad, wine's good, wine's bad. And so I've always said, eat what you're going to eat. What is it going to do? Knock a couple of weeks off your life, you'll be fine, you'll enjoy life. Stop worrying about it. Worrying will probably knock 10 years off your life. Anyway, the feds come up with dietary guidelines, and as far as I know, fatty foods are not on the list, right?
They're changing. Yeah, it used to be with the top of the pyramid, just a tiny amount. The plate that they now have shows about a quarter of your diet coming from fat. They're still not right. The literature increasingly shows that what's killing you is the sugar and the starches. It's the carbohydrates. The fats are just fine.
Yeah, and explain the difference between animal fats and plant fats, and which are healthier.
Yeah, so animals, if you eat animals, you're eating protein and fat. That's about all animals are. We don't really have carbs in them, in ourselves, and neither do animals we eat. So plants are, depending on the plant, 95% or more carbohydrates, and they have a little bit of fat. That fat is squeezed out in extraction mechanisms, and it's the way we get corn oil and safflower oil and all those other kind of oils.
Yeah. All right.
Those plant fats aren't any healthier for us than animal fats.
You're listening to the voice of Dr. Dan Peterson, his wife Kelly Peterson. Together they've written the book, The Asian Low-Carb Secret. And Kelly, in the book you call this the ketogenic diet. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And in actual fact, the word that we call it is nutritional keto.
Nutritional ketogenic diet. And so what would, let's skip breakfast and lunch, but what would dinner look like for the typical person who's adhering to this type of diet?
A typical dinner could be a portion of, say, 6 ounces of protein, which come from meat or seafood, and maybe 2 cups of vegetable. And you could have a side of a clear soup, either a chicken soup or something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be really filling because you're going to cook this dinner with the higher fat, which is a good fat that you normally use. Like if you use usually 1 tablespoon, we would suggest that you use up to 4 tablespoons while cooking. So that's the increasing on the good fat part and also eating the right amount of protein. And this meal is going to be so filling for anybody.
You know, and another trick that I've learned, especially eating Asian food, and again, it is the Asian low-carb secret, and we always think about fish and noodles and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and vegetables. And go ahead and try eating with chopsticks, even if you're not good at it, because I've always heard that the slower you eat your food, the more you're going to get filled. And if you just stick with the chopsticks till the last bite, it's going to take you an extra half hour to finish your meal. And there you go.
It is true in a certain aspect. You use chopstick and pick up food, and it's only a bite at a time, maybe 2 bites continually at a time. And you will eat slower, but do not use the chopstick and hold up the bowl and shove it in the mouth. Then it wouldn't make any difference.
No, and don't shove your chopsticks up the nostrils of your neighbor at the table. That's bad.
No, and that's what most Asians do is shoving down. But I do agree that if you use chopsticks, you will eat slower.
You thought she was going to say most Asians shove the right up
chopsticks
the nostrils
up of the nose.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun at the family around the dinner table. So when we go to the grocery store, Kelly and Dr. Peterson, what should we look for? Packages that say low carb or low sugar on the label?
You look for packages that have no label, like for example, the fresh meat, fresh vegetables, anything that is good. Actually, they don't have to claim that they are good.
Right. Okay. So no label. See, that's an interesting way to look at it, because if you're going to get a label on something, it means it's been packaged and processed, and there's all sorts of other things that just kind of come along with the food that you may not be interested in putting in your body.
Exactly.
Well, we often tell people to start is just shop the perimeter of the grocery store, because that's where you're going to find the meat and the vegetables and the cheese and things like that. It's on those inner aisles is where you find all the processed food.
Yeah, yeah, like a box of cereal.
Yeah, the more of the claim on the package of how much micronutrients like vitamins or minerals or is low carb, the more you want to look at the fine print behind the packet what is in the ingredients.
Can I just ask you about carbs, though, because I don't think I'm alone in saying this. I love the bread. And if I go around the perimeter of the grocery store, they're going to have the fresh baked bread as opposed to the packaged mass-produced bread that's in the center aisle. And if I pick up a French bread or an Italian bread or something like that, and I bring it home, I very well am going to eat half of that by myself.
Yeah, that's
almost the worst thing you can do. I mean, bread hits your bloodstream almost immediately. The bakery is the one part of the perimeter of the store you want to run past. But there are answers. Kelly cooks a fantastic low-carb bread, which is, I mean, it's wonderful and doesn't have all those carbs. So there's ways to do that.
Okay, that's good. And then you put on a little extra butter on it, because you're saying the butter's okay, and then we're good to go.
Lots of butter, and it's delicious.
Nice to hear. Oh, I love you, too. That is so great. So permission to eat all the stuff that you knew was good for you all along, even though people told you not to. It's in the book. Read about it, The Asian Low-Carb Secret, a medically proven system to help you eat well, stay slim, and regain your health. The book is available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Go get it. Kelly Peterson, Dr. Peterson, thank you very much for joining us and finally giving us the permission to eat what we want.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Except for the bread, though. I don't know that I'm going to get past
the bread thing.
You don't have to give up bread either.
Just as in part moderation.
Of a, yeah, exactly right.
Moderation?
Yes,
yeah,
moderation.
But
it should be, carbs should be the number one thing in your diet. It should be the thing that you eat the most of. It's long-term energy.
He disagrees.
There's a significant amount of value to it. Yeah, he disagrees if you're trying to lose weight.
But
if
for
you
me.
Yourself, if you're trying to lose weight, you don't eat a bunch
Look,
of bread.
What
but if you're in a healthy condition,
bread.
You
well,
can have bread.
Now that the doctor's gone, we've got you, Chris. You're the scientist on this stuff. You've looked into it quite a bit. And you're fit. You're trim. You're in good shape. But you're also young. And so the thing is, with bread, if you're hypoglycemic, for instance, you eat a bunch of that bread. Let's say the first thing in the morning, you get yourself a bagel and a glass of orange juice. If you're hypoglycemic, a half hour to an hour later, you're going to be shaking and delirious and looking for a candy bar to get your blood sugar back in order.
Agreed. And I'm not encouraging people that are hypoglycemic to eat bread. What I am saying is that if you have a balanced, healthy diet, like the original food pyramid suggested that we all follow many years ago, you would eat more carbs and more breads than you would any other food.
Can I ask you a
question,
Chris?
Yeah.
Where were you when the doctor was on here saying the absolute opposite of what you're saying?
I was letting him pitch his healthy diet.
Feel free
and
to
his way of losing weight.
Feel free to jump in.
That's what everybody wants to do anyway, is lose weight quickly. That's why all these people are pitching these books and these different ideas, and they're all this paleo, Atkins, eat a bunch of fats, eat a bunch of proteins,
yeah,
and you will
fat,
shed weight. But
fat.
Once you've shed that weight, you better get some carbs back in your system. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you want to talk about not having energy. Protein will not sustain you.
Do you feel somehow handcuffed on this program to interject your thoughts and challenge the guests when you disagree with what they're saying?
No, not at all. I think that you have a flow going when you're doing an interview, and it's not easy to try to stick something in there or interject.
And
there's nothing wrong with their diet either.
No?
It's fine. If you're trying to lose weight, go that route.
You're okay with everything, aren't you?
If you're trying to be balanced, then you would balance it out with carbs.
Pick an opinion and stick with it, will you?
Flip-flopper.
I can't do
Flip-flop.
That. Yeah, I'm a neutral guy. I'm like Switzerland.
Are you?
That's right.
I'm so not. Mm-hmm.
They like the cheese neutral. and the coffee up there, don't they?
They sure do.
And the chocolate.
Yeah.
The cheese and the chocolate and the coffee.
And the skiing and they live a very neutral life over there.
Yeah.
You know, I did want to say, too, you were encouraging people to use chopsticks to moderate the amount of food that they put in their mouth at one time. I actually developed a technique with a fork that you can actually hold it like a shovel, and you can fit more than two or three bites in one portion.
Wow.
On your fork.
That's
so
good.
If you really want to bear down on some food.
Yeah, there you go.
Check out my fork technique.
Oh, by the way, along these lines, maybe not, Ralph Macchio is now 53 years old.
That's crazy.
That's older than Pat Morita was when he played Mr. Miyagi in The Karate Kid. Morita was 52 at the time when the movie came out.
Time flies.
Right. Yeah. And he still looks good, and so does Ralph Macchio.
Very young.
You think they eat carbs, Chris?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think they eat carbs.
All right. That's it for hour one of the show. There's more to come, including, is downtown Las Vegas about to die an ugly death? Again! Is Tim Tebow coming back to the NFL? And since today is St. Paddy's Day, we'll teach you how to open a beer bottle with a sheet of paper. No kidding. Those stories and more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends, coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, an expert preview on the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Which fast food joint is the number one with Americans? Any ideas? And do you even know what the Fremont Street experience is? Well, you'd better hurry and experience it before it's gone. The friends are here. Aaron Myers, Chris Martin. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. All right, it's a busy day. St. Patrick's Day. Welcome to it, and congratulations in advance for surviving it. Right?
So far, anyway. The festivities don't start till tonight.
You going to get your drink on? Or as they say, get your drink on?
I won't. Not tonight. No, it's a Tuesday night. It's a work night.
It's a work night.
I'm more responsible.
How about you?
No, I actually do have an event to go to tonight. It's my friend's birthday, so we're doing dinner, but... Yes, I have a busy day tomorrow.
Your friend's birthday is St. Patrick's
Day. It is, yes. So we're doing a double celebration.
Yeah.
Will you change and put some green on?
I might have to if I'm actually going to be out in public somewhere.
Right.
Yes,
go all the way. Do you like the green eyeshadow, green lipstick, green earrings?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, because the pincher bugs are going to be out there for sure.
Probably. Yeah. So you have to be careful.
And you, young lady, are probably a magnet for that kind of unwanted attention.
Ha. I wish. No.
Oh, all right. Now what would you pay? All right, let's get this thing rolling here, the second hour of the program. And there has been increasing controversy around the idea of concussions and football. Do you put your kid in Pop Warner anymore? Is the game just too violent? Are players putting their life and future livelihood and health at stake by playing even more than a couple of weeks in this game? Are they destroying their brains? And, boy, this whole movement to get to crack down on the violence and the cracks to the head might have a new spokesman out of this guy who has taken a stand early in his career in the NFL. Isn't that right?
Yeah, very early. Chris Borland, who played San Francisco 49ers, you know, he signed a $3 million contract and had a $600,000 signing bonus. And apparently after his rookie season looked really good. Well, he's now decided that he's going to retire because he wants to avoid those long-term injuries and doesn't think it's worth it, the money or anything like that, that those injuries that he could suffer.
That's quite a stand.
Road. Yeah. Now, 24.
He's made $3.6 million so far as an NFL player. Chris, do you know anything about his contract? Is the team on the hook for more than that, do you think?
No, it sounds to me like it was a one-year deal with this guy. He's not the only one. There was a couple of other players, another player from San Francisco that are retiring early also.
Interesting.
So that's what's bringing up this subject.
So it seems to me like this guy might have the ears and eyes on him and could perhaps write a book out of this, do a speaking tour, and maybe lead the movement to do something. I don't know what. And it makes you wonder, is NFL on a track to extinction, and how long will it take?
Yeah, no, they are not. But
no, I agree. People like it too much, but I do think they'll have to do something to protect players a little more.
Well, we used to love bullfighting, you know? Too. And now look.
Yeah.
Is that a bad comparison?
Yeah. Who likes bullfighting? No.
It's a challenge because we know that these players don't want to end up crippled, and we see all those stories of that happening. But the people that truly do love football are going to play it for the love of the game. And what's going to be interesting is to see how the owners start to deal with this, because now you have these young guys that have the potential to come in, make a mint in their first couple of years, and then just walk off. Yeah. The owners are going to have to protect themselves somehow.
Mm-hmm. Get the "see ya suckers" clause written in, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Try to keep them longer term.
All right. You know what? Have you ever been on a cruise ship vacation? They try to sell you all these excursions because you don't want to necessarily just stay on the ship the whole time. You're just going to eat and drink and sleep on a patio chair while you're on there. And if you're lucky, you might win at shuffleboard. But just the same, they give you all these opportunities to go on those excursions to shore and to swim with the sharks or whatever it is, just fun things. And a bunch of folks on a cruise ship, they got one of those fancy excursions free of charge. Isn't that right, Aaron?
Well, there was the Sunset Cruise on the Zambezi River, which is between Zimbabwe and Zambia. And you know, there are all these British tourists on it, and they see crocodiles up in the water, in front of them.
Ooh,
and they're like
fun.
Having a feeding frenzy. So everybody's like, oh, we're going to see crocodiles eating. Well, they get closer, and they realize that the crocodile was eating a human body.
No!
Yes, they were eating a human, and there were like trousers floating in the river.
No!
And nobody's reported missing in the area, but they think it might be a poacher that, was in a shootout that had happened, and now he got eaten by a crocodile.
And tonight on the menu, after the steak and lobster, there will be just desserts.
Yeah, you're not going to think the same about romantic sunset cruises after that one.
Man, yeah.
Very, very disturbing.
Now, that, again, I am correct on that in saying it was a free excursion.
Yep.
Okay, good. One more thing. The internet is a wonderful thing. If you've got somebody with a story that touches the hearts, strings of people who see it and read it or hear about it, and it goes viral, all of a sudden, good things happen. But it started with just a bad thing that happened to a little girl. Isn't that right?
Well, a little boy.
Oh, actually, a boy.
A little boy. He's 4 years old, and his dad died suddenly in January. They don't know, but literally collapsed. And apparently his mom has said that he's just struggling like crazy. I mean, he's even asked his mom, can we go dig up daddy today?
Oh.
So just not understanding and very upset. And so her friends from a Gymboree group started a Facebook support page and sent t-shirts and things like that to the little boy, and it's gotten noticed, and now people from all over are sending him gifts and letters, just trying to cheer him up. And I mean, they say he's received gifts from all over, like Belgium, Scotland, England, Australia even. And there's a little photo of him, and it's very cute, and it shows all these t-shirts he got that says like, my daddy was awesome, or my daddy's cool, and things like that. So it's just nice when people come together when somebody's struggling.
It is.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Let's. Sorry about the
I know.
The
now
whole
I'm getting
thing.
Sad.
Yeah. That's tough to understand.
Aww, it is when you're 4 years old.
Gone.
But
wow.
It's heartwarming to see how everybody
supporting
will, like you
them.
Said, come together. Yeah. And try
for
to
a little boy. Yep. Yeah.
Explain it the best you can to the, to
right,
the young fellow.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we've been talking a lot about the big fight. Everybody knows what the big fight is, right? Pac-Man Mayweather. And it's coming, what, May 2nd? Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pac-Man. See, that's his nickname. Does Mayweather have a nickname?
Is he? Yeah. Money.
Money. Is that what it is?
Really?
Money Mayweather. Yeah.
Floyd Money. It's not Floyd the Android.
No.
Okay.
Though you can try to coin that. You better grab the domain name now.
Okay.
Floyd the Android.
Yeah.
Kind of like it.
Or you could change it to Mandroid.
Well, yeah, that sounds too much like Manny, though, you know.
Does it?
The other guy's name is Manny, so.
Yeah, ultimately, when you win, though, you can call yourself anything you want.
Yes.
All right.
Including Rich.
We're talking about that bout, but there's another one that might eclipse the interest of the Pacquiao Mayweather fight, and perhaps this is a fight that more people would like to see.
Yeah, the potential's there for everyone that thinks that the Manny Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather fight is the best fight of the century. It might not even be the best fight in May, because on again, off again, Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney is going to jump in the ring with former boxing champion Evander Holyfield on May 15th.
No kidding.
To raise
and
money for charity.
Really going to let them fight? Really? Like, big boxing gloves, like those fake ones that are kind of huge and like don't hurt that much, maybe?
Not that big, but it won't be 16-ounce or 20-ounce gloves.
Now Romney's not a little guy. He's what, 6'2", 6'3"?
6'2", 6'3". He's in good shape, but he is also approaching 70 years in age.
So
in there and break him.
So what if he's feeling a little peckish? He's hungry. He needs a snack while he's in the fight. How many rounds before he goes for Holyfield's intact ear?
Right. Just takes the other one.
Yeah.
He'll even it out. He'll, you know, be symmetric.
The fight probably won't last very long. Maybe it'll go around. They'll have some undercards and some things to keep you intrigued prior to it. And they're calling it the Quake in Salt Lake, by the way. They're going to hold it in Salt Lake City. Salt Lake. It'll be May 15th.
Yeah.
Romney says it will either be a very short fight or I'll be knocked unconscious. One of the two.
Yeah. I mean, is he encouraging Holyfield to not hold back?
Just like
No. He makes it sound like it's going to be more of a sparring match, and I think that's what it's going to be, is sort of an exhibition for all the people that are there. They are raising money for charity. It's for an organization called Charity Vision, which is a humanitarian organization, and the sponsorships range from $25,000 to $250,000.
Wow.
So it's almost raising as much money as the Mayweather fight.
How about that? All right. We're on the topic of sports, and it's that time of year again to get absolutely nothing done at work and suddenly pretend you know everything there is to know about men's NCAA basketball. Yep, March Madness. And we're going to help you fill out your bracket and make you seem smarter than you actually are about this stuff next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. It's Phil Hewlett and friends. We're going to talk a little round ball now. Basketball. The NCAA men's basketball tournament is underway this week, and we've got our brackets right here. We're all either filling them out actively or have already done so. Everybody on the crew here has theirs ready to go. And joining us live to help us be smarter about this stuff than we perhaps actually are, and to give you an NCAA tournament preview, is Brian Peterson. He's a featured columnist at the Bleacher Report. We all know what that is. We read it constantly. Brian, thank you very much for being here. Everything is set, from what I understand, and things get underway in 2 days, but there are actually games today and tomorrow, right?
Yeah, today and tomorrow are the first four games that they added a few years ago to up the field to 68 teams. More to allow more at-large teams to get in, but only two of the four games involve those at-large. Two of them involve the 16 seeds from some of the smallest conferences.
Yeah.
It's a little bit unfair that they have to go in those games. But
it's a Cinderella dance, more or less, right?
Yeah, except that the problem with the 16, what it does for them is it gives them the opportunity to say they won a game in the NCAA tournament before they go up against a one seed,
yeah,
which has never lost to a 16. So
right.
There is some benefit there.
Okay, so we're going to hang on to those teams for a second. They might come back up in conversation as we go through here, because the temptation is, when filling out your bracket, is to second-guess the top seeds and put in a Cinderella team or your alma mater, because your judgment is clouded by your loyalty. Are the four number ones a pretty good bet this year to go to the Final Four?
Well, I mean, let's separate Kentucky first, because they are as safe a bet as you may have ever seen because of how they've been playing this year.
And everybody I talk to says, yeah, Kentucky's going to take it all.
Yeah, exactly. And their portion of their region is the weakest because they're so much stronger than everyone else. I think Notre Dame is maybe the only team in there that has a chance to beat them. Beyond that, Wisconsin strong, Villanova, Duke, they could all make it or they could all lose.
Yeah. And it all depends on any given day. It's that kind of, you hate to say that. Aren't you taught in sports never to say on any given day?
Yes, and you try not to write it. But, it's a true statement, the unpredictability of sports. You don't know if someone could turn an ankle. When they play these games in giant domes, it's not the best acoustics and angles and viewpoints for shooting.
Yeah.
You could suddenly have a cold game.
Yeah. All right. So we've all got more or less all of us, except for our production assistant, Nick Wright over there. He's got Duke upsetting and winning the whole thing, but we've all got Kentucky. But in your opinion, Wisconsin, Villanova, Duke, the other three number one seeds, which team is the most vulnerable to be taken out early?
That would probably be Villanova, mostly because we don't know much about them. Part of that, they were not on ESPN all season. The Big East played on Fox Sports, so maybe they didn't have as much attention on them. They also didn't play as notable a schedule as Wisconsin and Duke and all the other power teams did. So we're kind of waiting for the other shoe to fall with that team, whether or not they really are that good.
All right.
And they have some strong teams in their league, in their region, that could knock them off.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I've got them beating Lafayette. I've got them then in the next round. I've got LSU beating North Carolina, so LSU, Villanova. Villanova wins that, but then loses in the next round to Uni, and Uni goes on to meet Virginia. I don't know if you're following me on any of this. It's all plausible, again, on any given day, but ultimately my final two are Kentucky and Virginia.
Okay.
But so reasonable, plausible. Which teams stand to surprise early and follow that updraft all the way to the end, in your opinion?
Well, there's a couple that can go in that direction. One that I'm really looking at, when I was mentioning those first four games before, since they've put those in, the at-large games have tended to produce a team that gets hot and makes it to at least the second weekend. Tennessee did it last year, and I think BYU could do it. They play tonight against Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an up-and-down, high-scoring game, but they have some shooters and scorers on that team where they could make it to the second weekend, knock off a team like Baylor in the Xavier in the second round, and then Baylor in the third round, and then even give maybe Arizona a fight in the Sweet 16.
No kidding. Wow.
Beyond that, I mean, it's going to come down to some of those 12 and 13 seeds, like an Eastern Washington or a Wyoming. I mean, you were mentioning Northern Iowa making it pretty far. I have Wyoming actually beating Northern Iowa because that's going to be one of those rock fight games where the first team to 45 win.
Yeah, yeah. All right, interesting. And how about Boise State out of this Cinderella dance, the first four? Any chance that they could beat Providence in the first round?
Well, first they have to get past Dayton tomorrow in Dayton, which is as unfair a matchup as you could ever expect in a tournament. Dayton's the only team that's allowed to play at home because of those first four games.
Hmm.
If they can get past Dayton, yes, then they can go far. But that having to win a road game in the tournament.
Get out a 10, 12, 15-point lead early and quiet the crowd. That's the key. All right, so let's see. Who are the standout players that we're watching who will rock this tournament? The expectations are that they would, and then they'll make it so we can't wait to see them play in the NBA.
Well, Frank Kaminsky, the center from Wisconsin, came out of nowhere last year and had such a breakout year. He was beautiful to watch all season and into the NCAA tournament. He did not leave to go pro after his junior year, despite being a seven-footer that would have been drafted, came back to enjoy the college experience, and he's been even better this year. And he is going to be so fun to watch throughout. And it's one of the reasons I want to see Wisconsin go as far as possible, because he plays the game purely. It's not about ego or anything like that. He's got great fundamentals. Beyond him, I'm a big fan of some of the large gentlemen in the game, one of which there's a man named Mamadou Ndiaye. He's a 7'6", 300-pound center from UC Irvine.
Ooh.
He's going to be going up against Louisville in the first round, and Louisville's got a monster dunker named Montrezl Harrell. Just to be able to watch those two go against each other in that first game, we're going to get a dynamic player that moves on.
Sounds like fun. And you know what? It's encouraging for fans of Wisconsin because, man, they just barely made it out of that game 2 days ago, the overtime game. And there was a moment there where we thought they weren't going to win that game.
Oh, yeah, and that can kind of be the boost. If you look back, when Florida won one of its national titles, they almost lost their first round game to Butler. It took a basket at the buzzer to get there, and then from there on, they took off from that. So sometimes you can use that motivation either of a loss or a close win to be able to propel you. When Arizona won the title in 1997, and that's my alma mater, and I was going there at the time, they lost their last two regular season games and then went on a run during the tournament.
Well, look at that. I've got Arizona in the Final Four. Tell me your Final Four, please.
My Final Four, I have Arizona beating Wisconsin out of the West. I have Villanova knocking off Virginia in the East, Gonzaga taking down Duke in the South, and then I have Kentucky over Notre Dame in the Midwest. It's not a crazy Final Four.
No, it's not, and the national champion is Kentucky, right?
I do have Kentucky at this point, but you never know. I mean, Arizona is who they would face in the Final Four, and Arizona is one of those teams that has the size inside and the athleticism on the outside that could potentially.
Yeah. Well, all right. Chris here has a question for you.
Well, you sort of just answered my question because I was going to ask it. Really, it's probably going to be Notre Dame or Arizona that has a chance to take down the giant of Kentucky in the West. So you sort of answered that. Sounds like you think that Arizona has the better chance. But I'm also curious about UCLA, because we're here in Southern California. They sort of snuck in, a lot of people would say unfairly. Do they get out of the, well, good chance they can get out of the first round, I guess. Do you see anything happening with that team?
You know, I think that they could be one of those teams that will prove it. I think they'll be able to beat SMU. I think they just have a little bit more athleticism there. And the motivation of being in when a lot of people didn't think they would, if they were to lose badly, it's going to reflect badly on the school. I think that motivation could help them. They'd have a chance against Iowa State in the third round. Iowa State's a very fast-paced team, but they're also one that has the tendency to fall behind. And if UCLA can hold them off there, then they would potentially go up against Gonzaga again and get a chance to beat them when they lost at home earlier in the season.
Yeah, and
out of the realm of possibility.
Right, and of course that would upset the apple cart for all the Iowans out there who would love nothing more than to have an Iowa State game in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I don't even know if Iowa can get past Davidson in that first game.
Wow.
There. But there's a lot of those potential rivalry games that could pop up, or state supremacy, and you see them all over the Midwest. I mean, we're very likely going to get Wichita State against Kansas in the third round, and those teams aren't willing to play each other during the season. And then we also could have Notre Dame against Butler in the third round. There's even the potential, if things went really crazy in the Midwest, we could have an all-Indiana Sweet 16.
Ryan Peterson, you know your stuff. We love reading you in the Bleacher Report, and we will continue to follow your coverage during the NCAA tournament. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, wow. What do you think? UCLA all the way.
No, probably yeah, not.
Probably not. Huh?
He's right. I think his prediction is right, though. They have the skill set, and the thing is they have that back-against-the-wall mentality because a lot of people don't think they should be in there. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes that does help you.
No, it's very interesting. And who knows? Kentucky could lose in the second round or something like that.
Which would be wild.
Stranger things have happened in this tournament, for sure. Just a quick note. Do you know what eproctophilia is?
Something with proctology.
It's a sexual fetish where you are incredibly turned on by foul body odors, especially flatulence.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Well, now you know.
Yuck.
All right. Something else that stinks is when you head downtown Las Vegas, the old part of the area, not the strip, the other place. But we're going to go to Vegas, baby, just the same. And what about that old town downtown experience, the Fremont Street experience? Do you even go there anymore, or is it done? Have you even seen that covered walkway on Fremont Street? I haven't. Our travel guy has, and he gives us the pros and cons of downtown Vegas next on Phil Hewlett and Friends. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, and you want to get out and it's March Madness. Maybe you want to go to the sportsbook part of the casino there in Las Vegas, just kind of hang out, have some drinks, and... I can't figure out that sports book on the wall. There are just too many things to look at. It's confusing.
Just pick your favorite team and stick a number at it.
Yeah. But I'm inclined to go to the Strip when I go to Las Vegas, but not to the downtown area.
Yeah,
how about you?
I think of the Strip. I don't even think of downtown most of the time.
Yeah. And downtown, it's just always had a PR problem. People think it's smelly and dilapidated, and it's a glitter gulch. Is that what they used to call it? Yeah. What's a gulch anyway? It sounds like someplace you go to lay down right before you die. Anyway, is it dying? Is it resurging? Is it something else? We're going to talk about Old Town downtown Las Vegas now with our travel guy, Gary Warner. And Gary, I can't remember the last time I went to downtown Vegas, and I certainly haven't seen the domed walkway there, the Fremont Street experience. I have not. I've only seen pictures of it.
See, that would disappoint the city fathers out there. That's the whole reason they did it. You know, Vegas is a family spot for me in real life, in that my uncle and aunt lived out there, and my uncle was the big contractor who built the famous fire pit with the water around it at
Treasure Island.
The coffee shop there, the Peppermill, old place.
Oh, that famous one.
Yeah, it goes back to the 1950s and 60s. He was involved in building a lot of the casinos out there, so I've been going out there for years.
So it's better than the one they built at Treasure Island?
Yes, I think so.
Okay,
that's
fine.
Family pride.
All right, I got you.
You know, but the thing is, when I first went out there, downtown was second only to the Strip. And then you got to remember that this is the original area where there was a lot of gambling. It goes back to 1915, first paved street in Las Vegas. And then when all those Hoover Dam workers started coming into town and gambling really took off, this is where they went. And they built all these little – it's called Glitter Gulch because it's a tight little street, and there's all this neon. Two famous statues there. I forget, it's Vegas Vic and Sally something or other.
Is Vegas Vic the Howdy Partner guy?
Right.
All right.
And, you know, and it was fantastic. It was just a fantastic-looking place back in its heyday. If you ever watch the last James Bond movie that Sean Connery made was set in Vegas. They have a race around the Glitter Gulch there. And in 1987, in probably the one of the great videos of all time, U2 filmed Still Can't Find What We're Looking For, on Fremont Street when it was still open to the sky.
Wow.
But you're right. There was a decline there, and people get really nervous during declines, and they came up with this idea of building the Fremont Street experience.
Yeah.
And for those, unlike you, Phil, who have been there, basically what they did is they put what they call a space dome over the city, or over the street, for about three blocks, and they can project all sorts of music videos and things on it, and they turned the street into a pedestrian mall.
Hmm.
Now, I got to tell you, I enjoy it at times. I mean, you know, if you go to the 6 o'clock show and they play Time of the Season, and it's very psychedelic, and they've got these open bars, and the girls are dancing on top of the bars, and the music's going and everything like that, it's fantastic. But it just, you know, it's been 21 years now, and there's been some talk about maybe this thing is done. It's time to tear it out.
Tear down the dome before I even see it, before I even walk through there and see what it's like?
I mean, come on, 21 years?
Is that how long it's been?
Oh, wait, I thought this was like a new thing.
Well, yeah, see, look at the PR problem they have down there. Aaron thought it was new.
Well, you know, that's the thing, is that if you drive down the strip and you get to the Stratosphere, then you have to go down all the way to downtown, and it's the area in between that is really nasty looking. You got a few chapels there, stuff like that, but
yeah,
it's a lot of apartments, and it's kind of scary looking. Now, when you get down to Fremont Street, there's a lot going on there, especially in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
I think we talked before about the Plaza Hotel was able to buy up all the really classy bedroom sets that the Fontainebleau Hotel had when they went into bankruptcy. So they got this slick stuff there. There's a great steakhouse there that's owned by Oscar Goodman, who's the mayor of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
The steakhouse that is shown in...
He's a mobster, right?
He was the lawyer of a mobster.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, all right.
He's
connected.
He is happy to own up to that. He says that briefcases would come empty from Detroit, and he would send them back full.
Now, I want you to ask your flame pit building uncle. Was it your uncle?
He's passed away, so unfortunately I can't do that.
But. All right, well, maybe ask somebody in the family, because I am surprised with all the development over the time that the Strip hasn't expanded enough, outward enough, to almost reach the downtown area.
Well, there's a very good reason for that, and it's the reason the Strip exists. The Strip is not Las Vegas.
It's not.
Las Vegas ends at the Stratosphere, the city of Las Vegas. Everything else out there is Cook County.
Oh. Oh.
So that's the unincorporated area. That's why the mobsters, you know, the Bugsy Siegels went out there, built those big casinos on what was the road to Los Angeles.
Yeah. So I could go out there and do a deal with the city of Las Vegas as opposed to the Cook County where the Strip is, you're telling
me.
I could do a deal and build Hewlett Land if I wanted to, and then compete head-to-head with Vegas, with the Strip.
Siegfried and Roy, I think we bring him back.
Yeah. Siegfried and Roy, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got bigger plans.
Bigger plans. Debbie Reynolds?
Does it get any bigger?
You know what? We established earlier on that I'm a creative genius. You don't want to let me loose on an idea.
It's true. Uh-oh. Yeah. You know, and, you know, if Hooters can make it there, I think Bill Hewlett can make it there.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So can downtown compete with the Strip ever?
Well, they've tried, and there's some interesting things going on in that when things are going well, they get these big plans. They built the Mob Museum down there in the old courthouse, and that is a fantastic museum. There was a little war for a little while between the Mob Museum, which the mayor, Oscar Goodman, was backing in the old courthouse where they used to have the mob trials. And then these guys came in at the Tropicana and built the Mob Experience, which for $50 would take you through this sort of like play-acting thing. Everyone lost their shirt on the Tropicana deal, and it closed down.
Yeah.
The Mob Museum is more serious. It's a really cool exhibit. They've got a lot of stuff on there right now from Boardwalk Empire, that show, and they're starting to look at the transition from the mob to corporation in terms of owning the hotel. That's when AT&T came in, Howard Hughes came in, those guys.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. They have the wall from the St. Valentine's Day Massacre in Chicago in there, but you also get some really solid historical stuff. The Neon Museum, just north of there, is opening up.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a nice family trip, doesn't it? It's almost like...
There's some great stuff down there, and to me, you know, there was some talk a few years back. Basically, they built this thing called Fremont Street East, which if you haven't been to the Dome, you haven't been to Fremont Street East. But they rebuilt the El Cortez Hotel, which is the oldest hotel there, the oldest family hotel, spiffied it up. And then the two blocks east of that, they made kind of the hip area of bars and cafes and things like that with neon martini glasses and old.
Oh, really?
When they launched it, everybody thought, this is great. This is an example of why we need to get the Dome off. And it's just had trouble ever since.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing. The Strip area went through a phase where they thought they were going to be more family-oriented. You remember that, right?
Yeah.
And then they said, no, forget that. We're going to go back to, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And they've got all the campaigns, just the right amount of wrong. That what's that right. one hotel that advertises that? I mean, it's the kind of thing where you go, you're going to hang out, you're going to meet somebody you never saw before, and you're going to have a night that you will remember forever but won't talk about publicly. And every hotel has the naked swimming pool scene.
Swimming pools, yeah.
Yeah. And so they've gone the opposite direction. And
well, actually, they haven't gone the opposite direction. They have what they have is they had the wrong idea, Phil, which is that you don't want to bring your kids with you. You know, the MGM roller coaster land and all that kind of stuff. What they were trying to do was get the average Joe to come back 6-7 times a year, play the slots, play the poker machines that you know nobody can win. They just make a ton of money for the casinos. And what they hit on was the idea of these card clubs.
Yeah.
So mom and dad will come out and dump, you know, $1,000 five times a year on these things that they can't win.
Yeah.
And they're not so dependent on the whales coming in anymore, the big roar guys.
Yeah, yeah, right. But you know what? Why not just build another, like, 5 or 6 convention halls and just bring all the – because the conventioneers drop a ton of money on the city, I would imagine, too.
Well, you know, they do, and there's still more and more building going on. We talked about this at the north end of the Strip. They're finally starting to finish up some of those hotels.
Yeah.
There's been some renovation downtown. The D Hotel, which has a Detroit aspect to it.
Yeah.
The Union, it's not called the Union Plaza anymore. It's just the Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
Golden Nuggets down there has one of the great swimming pools of the area. I think the key thing that kind of killed off Fremont Street was when the rail from Los Angeles died.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of talk about getting high-speed rail that would, again, come back into the station used to be right there at Union Plaza at the foot of Fremont Street.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, that's not going to happen in our lifetime.
Tear it off?
Yeah, I think they should just tear it off and just level the entire place and put a giant swimming pool in there.
Well, I think, you know, what I like to say, I think you got the key, actually, on what you're talking about. Is I think they need to find a way to unite the area from the stratosphere to downtown.
Yeah, make it more part of the party.
People feel like they're going into, you know, some sort of shooting gallery in between.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, that's rough, but not too far from the truth. Well, Gary, thank you very much, and we're going to roll the dice on Fremont and see what happens. If it comes up snake eyes, it's done.
The next couple of weeks, I'm going to be reporting to you from the road. I'm going to be going up to the Pacific Northwest, and I'll have more details next week.
Good. Can't wait to hear it. Gary Warner, thanks as always.
Take care.
All right, you too. All right, how about that? Well, don't know still that I'm going to ever go to downtown Vegas.
Mm, yeah.
You've been there before, though. You've experienced it.
I have. I've experienced it, but it had to be more than 21 years ago because that dome wasn't up when I went, that's for sure.
I really thought that was new. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what else they're going to tear down? What's Microsoft tearing down?
They're tearing down Internet Explorer.
What?
Yeah. Microsoft made a huge announcement. They're going to drop Internet Explorer for good. Which many people are happy about, and they're not actually dropping it. They're rebranding it with its successor, codenamed Project Spartan.
Oh.
They're still testing some names, but they'll be launching the new browser with Windows 10, which is coming out later this year.
Imagine all the viral memes they can get going with the, this is Spartan.
Yes, those will be going
seems
everywhere.
Seems more like a CIA mission
I
versus
don't know.
A browser name.
Yeah. Well, here's what's important, though, is the ability to open a bottle of beer with a sheet of paper.
That is a skill.
I'm going to teach you how to do that next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.
Come
All right, here we go. We're anything here on the program, if not helpful to you in teaching you what you need to do, the skills you need in life to get by in a pinch. And what better way to impress people when you're out drinking on St. Patrick's Day than to show them how full-on MacGyver you can go, right? Drunks will be impressed with this. There's a YouTube video floating around that shows how to get the cap off of a beer bottle using nothing but a sheet of paper. And apparently it's an old trick. I'd never heard of it, but if you've never heard of it, like me, here's how you do it. First thing you do is you fold the paper in half from the top to bottom. Not the bottom to see. You initially went from the bottom to the top. You want to fold the top to the bottom.
Well, it's the same thing. I'm just going to flip it over.
There you go. All right, fine.
Complicated.
Then fold it in half longwise three times. Until it's long and thick. Longwise. You went shortwise.
This way. Okay, longwise. Yeah. I'm with you.
Boy, see, we're in bad shape.
So it looks like a bookmark.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thick bookmark.
All right. Now, fold that in the middle to turn it into a V shape.
All right.
All right,
I'm
got it?
I'm with you, sure.
Now, do you have a beer bottle?
I just so happen to.
All right.
No, I don't.
Hold the bottle steady. Put the V part. Under the cap. Oh, there's a beer bottle.
Mike Stark.
Okay, this is a mess waiting to
happen. I'm going to cover my face just in case.
All right.
I get to drink this once I open it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. Is the camera on him, by the way?
No.
No, it's not. All right.
It is.
All right. Now hold the bottle steady and put the V part under the cap and pop it off.
Yeah, right.
This is like a dangerous game.
Oh, Erin's shielding her face.
Uh-huh, just in case.
Yeah.
Not a chance.
No?
Here, watch this.
Now, you might want to practice once or twice. Oh, look, he's opening it with oh, look, he got it open. He's drinking a beer.
Wow.
What'd you do just then?
A bottle.
I used my empty purified drinking water bottle. I used the cap from it.
Oh, interesting.
Anything to apply pressure.
And now you have a beer. All right. Well, we'll post that video so that you could see it. All right. Because I don't believe it can happen after watching Chris try it.
Well, the paper's too flimsy. You need, like, cardstock or something.
Yeah. Here's what I can't wait to find out, Chris. What do real Mexicans think about Taco Bell?
I'm about to tell you. First of all, do you guys consider Taco Bell Mexican food? Would you classify it as such?
Well, it's in the category, but it's Mexican food.
That's been Americanized
a
lot.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's fine. It's its whole category on its own. Fast Mexican food, I guess.
So BuzzFeed has released a video. It's a video study where they had authentic Mexicans eat Taco Bell and critique the food. The results were exactly what you'd think. Here's some of the comments that the critics made. I can't even describe what I just ate, but it's not Mexican food.
Mm. Nice.
This is nothing like a taco. Number three. Number three, why are you making our food into this?
Aww.
Wow. One participant did describe it as a flavor explosion, but that might have been a translation issue.
Uh-huh.
Flavor explosion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, hard to know what that meant in his native tongue.
Yeah. All right. You know, speaking of fast food places, there's a new survey. Americans pick Chick-fil-A as their favorite fast food spot. The rest of the top five are Papa John's, Dairy Queen, Panera Bread, and Sonic. I don't see Taco Bell in the top five, but it is number 10, by the way.
That was fast food?
Yeah, fast food.
Interesting.
Panera Bread's not fast.
No, it's like way expensive for very little value, in my opinion. Jack in the Box, by the way, is Americans' least favorite fast food place.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They have such a wide variety on their menu that doesn't actually make sense, though, for fast food.
Yeah.
I've thought about that before.
Yeah, have you?
Yes, like egg rolls and fried mozzarella, but burgers.
And
like,
then the Jack in the Box tacos, there's some kind of other
mystery
kind of meat in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I call it delicious.
That's why you can buy three of them for a buck, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, boy, in a
it's
pinch,
the leftovers,
the extra hot sauce, and you got a meal. All right. What a heartwarming story about a pooch. And Erin, we can count on you for the dog
stories,
right?
Of course, of course. I guess there's animal rescue workers in Dallas have been trying to catch this stray dog who lives in this park. And last Tuesday, he kept barking at them. And usually he stays away, runs away. Well, he kept barking at them. And they noticed that he wasn't with the other dog that he normally hangs out with. So he'd bark and then he'd run. And then they'd follow him and he'd bark again and then he'd run. So they thought, okay, he wants us to follow them. Well, he did. He followed them into kind of an area where they found the other female dog who had given birth to puppies. And I guess they weren't doing very well. They were shivering. They were cold, lying in mud. And so the rescuers grabbed all of the dogs and saved them. And now the puppies eventually will be up for adoption. But he was a hero dog.
Wow.
Yeah. He saved all the puppies and the mama.
And our Web Munchkins have been on the case. They've got the first photo there. And then you click on the photo. You'll go to the Facebook page and you'll get to see the entire litter of puppies, some close-up shots too.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's a very Lassie moment, isn't it?
It is. Like,
yeah.
Follow
what is
me.
It?
Woof
yeah.
woof.
What is it, Fido? What are you trying to tell us?
Yeah, is Timmy in the well?
Right.
Oh, no.
That's apparently where Tim Tebow has been all this time,
in
not playing for an NFL team. Is there a chance he'll ever play again?
I hope so. I'd love to see it, but he did get a tryout with the Eagles this weekend. Chip Kelly, the coach over there, brought him on to try him out.
How'd that go?
Well, it went well. They said that he's throwing a lot better than he did a couple of years ago when he was released by the Patriots. He did not get a contract, though. Though his fans and fans of football in general are definitely rallying together to try to get him back into the NFL. I think they think it'd be great to see him. So I don't think he's going to make it with the Eagles, but maybe he'll get a chance somewhere else. Really, he should go to Jacksonville since he is a Florida native.
Yeah.
Or at
be
least
nice
was
coming
there for
home
college.
Story. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Plus, he's a good guy. And he's still, the point is while he's not on a team, he's still trying hard to get himself in shape to play football.
That is very noble.
He's not giving up on his dream.
Yeah. All right. St. Patrick's Day history. In 432, 1583 years ago, St. Patrick died, sort of. It was uncertain whether he passed away on March 8th or 9th, so church officials added the dates, making St. Patrick's Day the 17th. Hmm. Didn't know that. In 1755 on this day, the famous Cherokee Indian chief, whose name was Groundhog Sausage, sold what went on to become the state of Kentucky to the Transylvania Land Company. The price? $50,000. 1755 money, $50,000.
I stopped listening after you said his name.
Yeah, would you try groundhog sausage? That sounds interesting.
Oh, that's so strange.
Yeah, all right. That's about it. That's all I've got on that.
It's really the only way you can eat a groundhog.
Oh, 16 years ago, a panel of experts concluded that marijuana has medical benefits for people suffering from cancer and AIDS. And that was on St. Patrick's Day. How about that? Hey, that's it for today's show. We love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com or on Twitter at FAFShow. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, production assistant, Nick Wright. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. Here, listen to it. Isn't that great? Right on cue, it got louder. For Aaron Myers and Chris Martin, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time. Take it easy on the booze tonight, will you? I'm Phil Hewlett. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends!
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.